This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics. In this weekly show, the Husker Online team will give you the latest insight on Husker football, basketball, baseball, and of course, recruiting. Now, here's your host, Husker Online publisher, Sean Callahan.
Hello here, and welcome again to another edition of the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett. One of my favorite weekends of the year, guys, Memorial Day weekend.
Wow. You do get fired up.
I like, because it is like you're home, you got Big Ten baseball on, hopefully Nebraska's playing, fire up the Traeger, maybe make some.
Keep selling it. I need more.
You go buy college football preseason magazines at Barnes and Nobles.
He's big on magazine season.
Yeah, that is a big moment. More. What's on the grill, Sean?
Yeah, what are you cooking?
Probably ribs.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Well,
you are
doing ribs. I live in a house with three other women.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get everybody on board with ribs.
Two of them are your daughters.
Two of my daughters. And like, right. they what is this weird
to clarify.
Meat? So,
Sean, that's a pretty good sales job.
Yeah.
You can do some relaxing too, right?
Yeah, just be in the backyard. School gets out this week, so you don't have to have more of the rigorous drop-offs, pickups.
Some adult soda pops.
Rob, you have flip-flops on right now?
Yes.
Okay, you do the flip-flop thing?
No.
You don't? I don't expose my feet.
I do because I just don't care.
Well, you're still young enough.
And you're rocking Lincoln High today, by the way.
Hey, so, Sean, I'm thinking about going to get some flip-flops, which I never wear.
Get some.
Just go to, right. Where do you go?
I don't know, wherever you want.
Abby?
You don't have to go anywhere. You could order them.
I'm not ordering flip-flops. I can go buy them. Oh, my God.
Wait, well, let's get back on track.
All right.
Let's get back on track here. Opening headlines, Memorial Day weekend. Thanks again for joining us. Hope everyone's got great plans. They're at a lake, listening to us somewhere fun. But let's start with this. A lot going on with Kevin Warren, the Big Ten,
the
media rights, and a new piece of it all kind of got unveiled here as we got ready to tape the show. NBC, you know, with the night games and playing this, it's a big part of the contract. NBC is going to have an exclusive night window. But the issue is, there are 3 weeks essentially in November that have been taboo for night games in Big Ten history. They've allowed night games to be played on the opening weekend of November, but then the next three have not been allowed. Kevin Warren greenlit the deal with NBC allowing games to be played on those weekends without really running it up the flagpole. And here's the issue. I think a lot of teams would be cool playing at NBC on night in the Big Ten, but the biggest ones, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, are not.
Right. So, I mean, we have to really explain this carefully because it's sort of complex.
Like, if you told Tom Allen, yeah, we'll play in November at night in Indiana, they'd say, hell yeah.
All right. The bottom line, Sean, is the NBC primetime deal with the Big Ten is not finished, and it's 3 months away. We're 3 months away from kickoff, right?
Right.
About 3 months away from kickoff. But that's what we have to. I mean, this is all very – Pete Thamel came with a very enlightening ESPN article, and that's the biggest takeaway. There's a lot of takeaways, but the biggest takeaway is the deal with NBC and the Big Ten is not finished. We thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking about a $7 billion media rights deal here, and now we're also talking about $5 million per school suddenly being in flux. $5 million per school.
Well, and the money, the $40 million for that conference championship game.
They found, what the schools found out is they are going to have to pay back nearly $40 million to Fox because Warren, the former commissioner, delivered NBC the Big Ten title game in 2026 without full authority. That is an incredible sentence.
He sold a piece of land he didn't own.
Essentially. That's fireable. Now.
And you can say what you want in a polite way. Kevin Warren was fired. He was not going to be given a new contract to be the Big Ten commissioner. Dennis Dodd reported that in January, and that just kind of fell under the covers.
Mm-hmm.
But
it did.
You go back to that report when he went to the Bears. Dodd reported on CBS on Twitter that Dennis Dodd was not going to be did not have a new contract in front of him to return as the Big Ten commissioner, period.
When it was first reported that that Kevin Warren was going to be the CEO and team president of the Bears, that's what he was leaving to do, I was immediately like, okay, something's not right here. He served 3 years. which is an incredibly low number for a commissioner. I mean, let's just go through a few. Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner since 2006. Okay, Jim Delaney was the Big Ten commissioner for 12 years. Greg Sankey has been the SEC commissioner since 2015. Not that long, but not that long in commissioner world.
Well, and the pay is more.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So right away, I was like, when Warren moved on, I'm like, wait a second. Commissioners don't move on after 3 years. So now we're kind of finding out that things weren't right behind the scenes. There was a real lack of transparency in a lot of this between the Big Ten front office, ADs, and ADs and coaches that were caught off guard.
Well,
by
we
some
saw
of this
during
stuff.
COVID.
We did. Yeah. We did.
And he was it Bill Moose that said we everybody did. Was kept in their own separate silos?
Silos.
And they purposely would not let the coaches, the ADs, and the presidents ever be together.
Right. We heard a lot of that. Now, at the time, you just don't know what to think exactly. But now you have this more evidence that there was a lack of communication from the top of the chain to the coaches, to the ADs. You're seeing it. Thamel's report, that was my second biggest takeaway is, man, the communication was lacking. There just wasn't enough communication here. These ADs were caught off guard by the NBC. The ADs at these schools were like, wait a second, we're playing at night? That's part of this
all
deal.
The way to Black Friday.
Yeah, and throughout November. Yeah,
and so that leads me to this first piece.
Yes.
So Penn State and Michigan State have now agreed to play Black Friday. It was set to be Michigan State's Senior Day game in East Lansing. The game is going to be moved to Ford Field in Detroit, which is about 90 minutes away from East Lansing. So it'll be indoors at night. So it's going to be a great stage for the conference.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, it's cool in like on the surface, but if you're Michigan State, you're not only giving up a home game, you're giving up your final home game of the year, your senior day home game, which means November 4th, when Nebraska goes up to East Lansing, that will be their final home game and essentially their senior day on November 4th, because then they follow that with two straight road games and then a neutral site game, quote unquote, in Ford Field. So, I don't know. I mean, can you imagine Nebraska even like thinking about doing something like that? Like, this just shows you just what a weird scramble this is.
Probably
to
not
to appease
right?
the networks. That's right. All this is trying to make
it's a scramble.
It's a scramble to try to recoup as much money as they possibly can from this screw up from Kevin Warren.
100%. It's a scramble.
And Penn State, my read is they're like, yeah, we'll do it, but it's got to be indoors in Detroit. Like James Franklin's like, we're not going to take our team in case it's like a blizzard. In East Lansing,
right,
and cost ourselves maybe a chance to win the Big Ten East Division because of weather conditions.
I don't know,
but that's where you get the purest pissed off right now because the NFL teams, Patrick Mahomes would have to figure it out.
Right, that's the I don't know what the weather patterns in East Lansing are that time of year. My guess is it's not pretty all the time. It's not that bad here though, right? I mean, our recent Novembers haven't been awful.
Yeah, it's hit and miss.
It's like one out of five is bad, I'd say. Okay.
Usually it's wind, just cold and wind, like the seasonal weather, like the winter snow and stuff. Like that hasn't been an issue for a long time.
It's funny though, like they act like it's this huge concession and sacrifice to play on Black Friday. It's like we've done it here forever, like 40 years or
whatever.
Well,
Rob makes a good point. I mean, Michigan State's given up its last home game. I mean, that's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
It is now for the consumer, great, right? I mean, I think it's great.
If you're watching on TV, it's great.
The ratings are going to be massive for that game.
Yeah, massive. It's a
big
game.
Again, this is a TV decision. There's no benefit for either side with any other part of this outside of benefiting the TV networks.
Let's look at Nebraska's schedule now. You look at the rest of November. So the first weekend, they'll get a night game on NBC. But there's two more weekends that have to be figured out. I think, and I was talking to Andy Candy, our good friend at Channel 7.
Okay.
And we both agree that November 18th Nebraska-Wisconsin game in Camp Randall, that just screams NBC primetime game.
Okay.
Especially if the Ohio States and the Michigans are going to be reluctant to want to play the night windows.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right.
And so I think when we go to Madison, you better pack up heavy. Don't pull a Dan Hop in 20 2014 He'll never 2013 and bring a windbreaker for your main jacket to Madison.
No, you're right.
Bring gloves.
And we've seen some wet.
Sorry, Dan, we love you.
We've seen some weather in Wisconsin, too. I mean, yeah. When Gordon ran for 700 yards against Nebraska, it was not a pleasant day, right? Right? He run for 800? Was yeah, that I get like that eight, wrong?
850.
So the challenge, though, is this November 11th and November 18th weekends, they've got to figure out some quality opponents to put in there for NBC.
Okay.
And get that all hammered out.
That's fascinating.
And that Nebraska-Wisconsin game just screams okay. NBC.
That makes sense, Sean.
All right. And we don't know kickoff times yet. We're still waiting. A lot of projections that Colorado-Nebraska is going to be big noon kickoff on Fox, which would be 10 a.m., which I know everyone at this room is excited about. I know maybe you aren't excited listening to us to have to get up early and watch Nebraska.
11 a.m. here.
But 11 a.m. here, 10 a.m. Boulder. I mean, so that we don't know that yet, but that's kind of the projections out there. We know Minnesota is going to be a night game to open the year. We know Illinois is going to be a night game. It's a Friday night game. But other than that, everything kind of still remains up in the air with the schedule. The Huskers did add a player this week, guys.
Yes, they did.
Tyler Knack, transfer 4-for-4, offensive lineman 6'6", goes 320 is what he told us. I know he's listed about 305-ish. But Tyler Knack comes in as a 4-for-4 transfer from Utah.
4-for-4 at a position where they have 14 scholarship, Nebraska has 14 scholarship offensive linemen, which is not, it's not a
what
real
did rule
low
say
number.
They need 16?
Yeah, not a real low number. You're down one or two. That helps. I don't know if this is an immediate contributor, but they are a little thin at tackle. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at what they have basically three guys that are proven ready to go tackle.
And then nobody else.
Not really. No. I mean, now who we're talking about is Bryce Benhart, Turner Corcoran, and Teddy Prochaska. Now, Noradine Nwili can play tackle in a pinch. I think Ben Scott could play tackle in a pinch. He played it. He played at Arizona State. That's not what you want. I don't think Jacob Hood, the transfer from Georgia, is ready. I don't know that for sure, but he's
Didn't seem like it. Didn't get talked about a lot.
So Knack definitely fills a need. Now, the one thing that gets your attention, he only had one other Power 5 offer.
Kentucky.
Out of the portal. Now, he had plenty coming out of high mm-hmm. school. And the one thing you look at there, he's from nearby Salt Lake. Utah thoroughly vetted him. I mean, it wasn't like he came from New York. He got there, and they said, oh, that's not what we thought. They knew what they were getting. Now, I don't know why he's leaving, but my guess is it's not something that they didn't know about.
And here's the thing with the portal. I think there's two kinds of portal shoppers. There's the immediate need.
Here we go.
The immediate need guy that yes. needs something like for the next night.
Right.
And
right.
then there's like, hey, I'm going to buy this and like save it and build it up.
And which one do you think this is?
And Matt Rhule is on that track right now. Like, he's not looking for quick fix portal guys. Like, he's not trying to solve the world's problems in one portal class. He's like, this is basically a mulligan for the lost recruiting class that happened in 2022 for Nebraska on the offensive line when Scott Frost was renegotiating his contract, firing assistant coaches, and they were on a mad scramble to essentially save their jobs. And
that's right.
They didn't take any high school players except Justin Evan Jenkins, who is the smallest offensive lineman on the roster. Not saying he's a bad player, but they had no tackle bodies. They took Kevin Williams out of the portal, Hunter Anthony out of the portal. Both guys are already gone. So they needed to kind of mulligan that mm-hmm. 2022 recruiting class on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm. And depth is invaluable at this point, especially on that offensive line that we've seen. So, I mean, he doesn't have like that veteran experience that maybe you would like, but you know, he's still a guy that can be a factor. I mean, with the way that he was recruited out of high school, there's something to work with there. Now it's a matter of just developing it and making it more substantial.
Most coaches will tell you one other thing, Sean. Most coaches will tell you that big bodies are critical. I mean, there's just not that many.
Never have too many of them.
Yeah, there's not that many 6'6", 320-pound guys that are capable of playing just around. And I'm not saying he's more than that, but, you know, that's a big part of this.
All right, when we come back, there's going to be a leadership structure change with how things are managed in terms of President Ted Carter, the Chancellor, Trev Alberts. We'll talk about that next. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
Hi, it's Sean Callahan with Husker Online. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel, Robin Washett, as we take you through this Memorial Day weekend. Some changes possibly going on at Nebraska with how the leadership structure is, particularly with athletics. And if you're not familiar, and we've learned a lot about what this is over the last couple of years because of COVID and some of the things that have happened, there is a COP, the Chancellor or the Council of Chancellors and Presidents. Every Big Ten school has one representative on there. For Nebraska, that representative had been Harvey Perlman and Ronnie Green over the years. I think there's now a proposal being put out there by a couple of the Board of Regents, Tim Clare and some others, Rob Schaefer, two regents that we both know. And they want to have President Ted Carter represent Nebraska on the COP, which in turn would maybe have the regents be more involved in some of these things instead of having some of the scenarios that we've dealt with over the years where, let's go back to 2019, Sipple, where out of nowhere, Bill Moose and Ronnie Green just extended Scott Frost from a 7-year contract to a 9-year contract right before a game that they were like 2 touchdown underdogs in against Wisconsin. You know, things like that. I just think a little bit more oversight over some of these big athletic decisions that have been made that, let's face it, have gone wrong at times over the years for Nebraska.
Well, no, it's a little more than a little more oversight. It's oversight. I mean, this is what the proposal is making Carter responsible for providing policy direction and oversight to Husker athletics. I mean, it's as Tim Clare told media, he would be in charge. I mean, he'd be in charge of that element, which I'm sure is fine with Trev. He would now, if you're Trev Alberts, so people wonder, well, how does this affect the AD? It's pretty simple, really. He will report to Ted Carter instead of reporting to the chancellor. There's an incoming chancellor from Southern Mississippi, Rodney Barnett. This is not
Bennett.
Bennett. Thank you, Rob. Thanks for cleaning up the old man.
Rodney Bennett.
Rodney Bennett comes in from Southern Miss. And imagine coming in from Southern Miss and dealing with all of the issues in front of the athletic director at a Big Ten school right now. NIL. Help me, Sean. NIL. I mean, they're going to open the training facilities. They're going to restructure Memorial Stadium. All of the things that are, yeah, I mean the TV deal that we're talking about, all these things.
He's got enough to worry about with academics.
That the chancellor does, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And to say, oh,
budget, academics, research, all that, I mean, that we never talk about because it's not our purview.
Like,
but
it is the athletics is the most important thing of the whole system, period. I don't care what you say.
It's the most iconic brand in the state.
And
not the, just sports.
I the mean, most important person in the leadership structure should be the one probably overseeing it.
Right. So yes, this makes sense.
And I think it makes sense, too, because of who we're talking about, Ted Carter. Like, he's not some lawyer that, you know,
our former professor
drives by the stadium on game days and wants to see the, like, he's at games. He wears jerseys to games. Like, he played sports, runs marathons.
Now, Ronnie Green, I'll say Ronnie Green and his wife, they were huge supporters, and they were really good in that role. Like,
they were, but I'm saying that to give a guy, Ted Carter, this responsibility, it makes sense because of what he's about and what he understands. He helped hire Trev Alberts. He helped hire Matt Rhule. And so, I mean, like, he's already 100%. Been hands-on on some of the most significant decisions this athletic department has already made. And so who better to continue to guide this thing down the right path in what is going to be some of the most, like, influential times in Nebraska sports history with the evolution of college sports and the conference of the Big Ten.
Right. And he will enthusiastically take this position when it's voted.
It matters to him.
Yeah, when it's voted in, which is, I think I'm seeing this as a rubber stamp. This is going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable. Yeah.
And don't you think maybe through the interviewing process of the new chancellor, the regents even said, you know, Rodney is going to be a really good chancellor, but maybe he's not a fit and maybe he doesn't want to do all this. I mean, it really hasn't gone well. It really hasn't gone well for the last few couple of chancellors in Nebraska that have tried to stick their nose in the locker room.
Who are we talking about?
Harvey Perelman. Well, I mean, just think about Harvey Perelman.
Harvey Perelman hoped Nebraska lost. That's my analysis of it. I mean, I mean, it's a pretty common opinion. He wasn't. I don't think he was big on sports.
He had a football coach winning 9 or 10 games a year that didn't fit the profile he wanted, and so he didn't want the guy to win. Like, I mean,
he just
took the winning for granted in some respects.
Right. I think it was broader than that. I mean, I think the football thing overtaking the academia was an issue in his mind. I'm just repeating what a lot of people have said many times.
But think about what a good football program does for your university. Look what it's done to Alabama and Clemson's enrollments.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't believe Sean, there's story upon story about how it's impacted Alabama's student body and its research numbers and its enrollment through the roof. Yeah, I mean, it has a huge impact on that.
I mean, I had friends in college that came here from out of state. I had a friend from Houston, and he came here because he wanted to go watch good football games. I mean, he liked the football. I mean,
that's some of that. Yeah, it's the front porch. That's what we always say, right? It's cliche, but the football program, the athletic department's the front porch to your university. Now, again, not everybody likes that. We like it. We're in that arena. But, Sean, not everybody likes that. And I don't think Harvey liked that necessarily.
But what do you remember more about your college experience? Like the Notre Dame-Nebraska 2001 game or the Oklahoma 2001 game or your Econ 210 class?
What I remember most is I made so many trips to drop an ad. I mastered it. That's what I remember most, and I got through.
I just remember, I mean, it was figuring out. I went to all the road games in college. And
did
so,
you?
Like,
going I didn't know to, that.
Going to class.
You did?
Yeah. From 1999, I only went to one road game, but in 2001, 2, and 3, I went to all the – so, like, figuring out how to go to class and then get to the road games, I mean, it was a blast.
Interesting, Sean. Anyway, yeah, that's pretty significant news that Ted Carter will be eventually here responsible for providing policy direction and oversight to the athletic department.
And it makes a lot of sense. When we come back, Trev Alberts held his final radio show for the season. He'll be back on later in late August, but covered a lot of ground. We want to hit on that and what he had to say next. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
You're listening to the Husker Online Show, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sippel, Robin Washington, and we're bringing in Abby Barmore to the discussion. We always get, I mean, guys, the most popular comment we get every week on our YouTube is, "More Abby Barmore, please." Yeah. So we've listened to the comments.
Give the people what they want.
And we want to bring Abby in on this discussion on volleyball because Trev Alberts on his weekly or monthly radio show confirmed that he's very confident that they'll be able to have seating. He said, was it 91,000, Abby?
Yeah, 91,000.
And then the world record is 91,553 for a soccer match in Barcelona. The U.S. record is 90,185. So I think the U.S. record, they're going at it, but do you think they can figure out a way to get to 91,554?
I mean, they're trying really hard. I was a little impressed that they were adding more standing room, I guess, is where they're going to find that space. And maybe clear out some of the construction areas and find people to get in there. But they're going full send on it, and I think that they'll get pretty close. I mean, a lot of people didn't think they would sell out so quickly, but they made it to 82,000, and that didn't include the students on the field and at the box level.
Mm. And the concert, that's coming out soon, right?
They hope to announce it soon.
Yeah, one thing Trev did say too, and he's like, you prepared people for this. Like, there's going to be a lot of people that aren't used to going to Memorial Stadium, going to this event. That be patient, because it's going to be a lot of logistics of getting this many people in the stadium. Because a football game, yeah, they say 86 or 88,000, but it's really not that many people. I mean, there's some no shows and empty seats and people that know how to get in and out of the stadium. This could be a lot of groups of people that maybe haven't been to Memorial Stadium.
Well, it's a Wednesday night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that alone makes it unique. I mean, you remember during help me now, 9/11.
2001 Rice game, Nebraska. They played a 6 o'clock game.
On a Thursday.
Nebraska was ranked number one in the country.
On a Thursday. Now, school was in session.
It was. Right? I had class that day.
Right. And it was that created a unique situation, parking.
Players went to class that day. That, you know, that played in the game.
Anyway, so the fact it's a Wednesday night and you're going to have 91,000 people
incredible.
There.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's kind of unique.
And the fact that that's before the concert artist has officially been announced. I mean, so like that's strictly for volleyball and a concert to be determined. Like, it's not, you can't even make the case like, well, they're there to see the concert and watch some volleyball along the side. That makes it even more impressive for what they're trying to accomplish for the sport of volleyball.
And how much do they say again, Abby, what they're going to give each school, like for financial, payouts?
I think I could be wrong, but I thought it was 50,000. Yeah, that's what I thought too.
But just what will the final number be that comes in the gate that Nebraska makes on this?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, you know, you got to think for John Cook in Nebraska, their wheels are going to spin like, God, should we do this again? But I think they're going to also find out it's a lot of work. Sticking on that topic of stadium, a couple other interesting notes that Trev Albert shared. You've got, well, first of all, Abby, there's going to be 400 more seats added to the Devaney Center.
Mm.
And there's a massive waiting list for volleyball tickets. So you're going to get 400 more people season tickets, which you're over there every game. I mean, how needed are those seats right now?
Yeah. I mean, everyone in town is clamoring to get tickets, and you can't just casually come in and find a ticket anywhere. They don't even have them available on StubHub or Ticketmaster or anything like that. Yeah, it's insane. And I'm also interested to see how they get 400 more seats.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Like, where are they going to put 400 new seats?
It's packed.
Are those upper benches? Remember the old upper bench seating in the Devaney, like the nosebleeds, you'd almost call them? Do they use those now?
Yeah, I think so. They use all every seat bench that they can get. And they have a bunch of standing room up top, too, that's always full.
My dad bought like a 4-pack or 3-pack when I was a kid. And like, oh, got this great deal. We got tickets to 4 games. They were all like upper bench seats when I was a kid. Like, we saw the
Husker games?
Yeah. The old Emeritus Classic. Remember mm-hmm. that tournament they used to run?
What years was this?
In the mid-90s.
Like, who was the coach?
Danny Nee.
Was it Danny?
Tyron Lue and Mikey Moore, that team.
Oh, there you go. Those are the days.
My dad took our friend. A bunch of my friends and I all went, but we sat up in those old Devaney bench seats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fun.
But all right, other ticket notes. Speaking of 400, 400 East Balcony club seats remain. And
football, for football.
That's for football. And there's more tickets that remain, but on the club level, that's a significant number, guys. Because I don't think people quite grasp the amount of financial commitment you have to make to get club seating. You're talking minimum $1,500 to maximum $2,500 per seat per year. So if you wanted to get a pair of club tickets, your donation would range from $3,000 to $5,000 plus the price of the ticket.
You listened to Trev Albert's talk on the radio on Monday night. Did he sound concerned, and was he in salesman mode?
They also rolled out these mini packages. Mm-hmm. You know, and
where it's Louisiana Tech, Northern Illinois, and then a Big Ten game to be determined.
And I just think they've got to figure out a way to get through this year, because I do believe after this year they're going to start the project of the stadium and fix things up. And he talked about that on the show. They've got to get Memorial Stadium right for the next generation. Right now, sitting on a little 12-inch bench seat with a guy's knee up your back is not ideal.
With no chair back.
Especially when the team's not winning.
With bench seating spaces that were made for people in the 60s.
You've got a south end zone that offers no escalators at all. I mean, it's stairs or ramps. Right. I mean, just no bathrooms. The logistics of the South Stadium.
You know, outdated.
It's third world in a lot of respects. Well, easy. Well, I mean, there's no elevators. There's no bathrooms. There's no concession stands. Mm-hmm. It's just bench. And you have to, if you sit in row like 92.
It's tough. You're right.
No, and you compare that to their peer programs. I mean, like, compare that to like Minnesota's stadium, which is significantly smaller, but how much more of an enjoyable fan experience is that?
Much more.
With the concourse space, with the seating, like.
Think about Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, we sat up in, like, the top areas. And, I mean, those were amazing seats.
Mm-hmm. They were. My dad's 82, 83 years old, and it's hard for him to go to games. I mean, because you got to walk up those steps. Yeah. If you got to walk up, if you're 83 years old and you got to walk up 40 steps, that's going to wear you down.
One of those really hot games. I mean.
Yeah. And what are you going to do, sit there for 4 hours? Yep. You have to go up those steps probably multiple times. You need to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and that's a hike in itself.
Do you remember Southern Miss? I think it was 2013, how hot that game was.
Yeah, people were like getting carried out on stretchers.
It was an 11 a.m. I think it was an 11 a.m. game, too. Might have been, maybe 2:30.
It was brutal.
And there was no wind, and it was like 95 with just
like humid. The on-field temp was like 100 and
oh, it was 20. Brutal. Oh,
I do remember that.
It was an opener.
And it was a tough game. They had to catch it. I mean, didn't Nebraska have to score late?
I thought that was one I thought that's the game that Southern Miss gave up their game in New Orleans for play Nebraska.
You could be right.
2013 Nebraska Southern, but because that was going to be in New Orleans, mm-hmm. and then
Nebraska won 56-13.
Yeah. Never mind.
No, I don't remember that being a close game.
They were not pressed. God only knows what game I was thinking of. But well, anyway,
they lost to Southern Miss.
Anyway, also Sean,
the track
matter.
Yeah, and you know, this is notable because look where the track program's at right now. They're the Big Ten champions on the men's side. Yeah. The women's are third. They're bringing in an unbelievable recruiting class with some of these football guys. Jeremiah Charles and Jalen Lloyd are, you know, their PRs are both 50-foot and triple jump, and they've got several guys that have run on the 10-4s, 10-3s, 10-2s, and the 100 coming in. So there's going to be more interest in track at Nebraska, I think, in the coming years.
And
but they have not been approved to add the stadium seating. So right now you've got a track, mm-hmm. with no grandstands.
Right.
Which means they can't host meets right now at Nebraska, which, you know, that's a little disappointing. I think, you know, like if you were a fan and you knew all these football guys were going to run out there next spring or jump, you'd maybe want to go watch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd like to know the parameters, like how much money they need to make this right. And Trev did say, he's like, we were given kind of a cheaper option and we don't want to do that. We want to make this right. And I know initially when they laid out the plans, I mean, there was some fear in Omaha that this facility could make a run to host state track. Now, I don't know if that's the case, mm-hmm. But it was going to be a phenomenal track facility with grandstand seating and the ability to host some NCAA, maybe regionals in Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. I think some costs changed.
Construction, yeah.
Yeah, construction costs escalated, and so now that's where we're at.
But it would be good for the community of Lincoln as well to have that kind of track here. You know,
be excellent.
I mean, Lincoln High right now is like the only track stadium in town, and that's where LPS runs all their stuff out of. And, you know, the old Ed Weir was pretty iconic, the way that track was right next to the football stadium.
It was iconic.
And so
it's gone.
And it's gone. Obliterated. I mean, it's where, and speaking of gone, the football facility is there now. And that is going to be something to watch, because I just get the sense this thing's going to go all the way down to the wire as far as getting that football team in there for the start of fall camp.
That's the objective. Now, Trev has made it pretty clear it'll happen, but I think you're right.
I think it's going to be tight.
Everything's not going to be done with that training facility, but enough for
the weight room, the locker room.
Enough for the football team to be in it for the football season.
And the coaching offices may not be in there yet.
That's awkward.
Mm-hmm. The coaching offices might be in the old setup.
Now, I said that's awkward. That's my sense. I would think it would be awkward. You'd want to be where your players are, I would think. If you're a coach, I would be. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
It's a massive project, though.
The Go Big project.
And, you know, with some of the supply chain issue, I mean, just to get your hands on materials, I was talking to a guy like, you know, a few months ago, if you wanted to get a garage door, mm-hmm. it was a 7-8 month wait to get a garage door sent to you. I mean,
my God.
Now that's gone down to like 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But like that's where things were at when they were building this project. So I'm sure there's a lot of supplies that maybe got backed up that have slowed down this deal. But that will be something to watch. Like, what will that look like? And good thing Nebraska's on the road, by the way, for the first 2 weeks.
Sean, that's a lot of raccoons getting in your garage. A lot of possum. maybe even a coyote.
We have foxes in our neighborhood.
They're not possums. Have chickens.
Oh, I talked to an animal control guy who said foxes have overtaken the Lincoln. I mean, we've never seen as many foxes in Lincoln as we're seeing right now. And that's from animal control. That's not from Sipple.
I was just driving down like by Costco. In the middle of the street, there was a fox
just trotting across
the street. Tearing apart a dead squirrel in the middle of the street.
Wow, that's dark.
Kids, look away.
Yeah.
We've had foxes in our backyard. We live right over by Costco, so.
Well, we've lost cats to a coyote. We lost chickens to a fox. There's a bobcat in our neighborhood.
There's a bobcat?
There's a bobcat that's caught on one of my neighbor's camera, catches it all the time coming over from Wyuka.
God bless, like, the neighborhood Facebook page and just the people that, like, post that stuff. I mean, there's a lot of other entertaining
posts.
You
don't want a bobcat in your backyard, trust me.
What would you do if you were, like, confronted with a bobcat in your yard?
Well, I don't know exactly.
They're more scared of you than you are of them, though.
Sean, I'd be careful with that mentality.
I could see you fighting a bobcat.
All right, there you go. There's our wildlife
on that note.
There's our wildlife segment.
On that note, when we come back, we'll take your questions in the mailbag. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washed, Abby Barmore now taking your questions in the mailbag as Abby is still with us here. Abby, where are you going to start us out with?
All right, first one. Do you think that Daniel Kalen gets a bump up to a 4-star during his senior year? And could he go off during his final year of high school at Bellevue West? And he has a lot of, you know, highly ranked wide receivers. How can that help him?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, he's right at the top of the 3-star. And I know it's led to some debate, like, why are Husker fans acting like this is a big time addition? He's a 3-star quarterback, and I mean, he's like the highest ranked 3-star. So it's like amazing if he just slotted up like one or two more positions in the QB rankings, he would be a 4-star. So it's hard to say. A lot of it will be his season and what he does and how it looks, and I don't know what other events he's going to take part in this summer, if he's doing any 7-on-7 or places where he might be seen. But he's a quality quarterback. He's, you know, one of the top, you know, there's 65, 70 power five schools now. He's the 27th ranked quarterback in the country.
Yeah.
And really doesn't matter. I mean, he's committed. Nebraska got him. And what he's rated when all is said and done, like, who cares at this point?
That's a good point, Rob.
Like, if you're trying to get offers, stars matter. Yeah. But if you've already found your school, like, just do your thing, Daniel.
He has a big season under his belt. You know, 38 touchdowns, 7 picks, 3,689 yards. I mean, he's done what he's done. Now, could he improve on that? Yeah, but I'm with Rob. Does it if he gets a star or not? It doesn't change my perception.
And the fact that what Sean said, like we're talking about like semantics here, where like he's as close to being a 4-star as possible. So you're going to downgrade him because he's a 3-star. But if he was slotted 2 spots higher, he'd be a 4-star. Like, you know, what are we talking about?
Right. This is, I mean, real talk. Daniel Kalen knows the score here. He was a second choice. Of course, he was a second choice. I mean, it was the number one quarterback in the country that Nebraska had a chance to get. All this is good. All this is perfect for Daniel Kalen. And they knew. The one big takeaway, Sean, getting away from the Star Talk, is Bellevue West, Huffman, Kalen, they knew exactly where they stood because Rule told them right away. Michael Huffman went to Rule in January and said, okay, how are you going to handle this? Kalen and Rayola, how are we going to do this? Rule said, we have a guy we're trying to get, okay? And if that doesn't work, we're going to you. It didn't work with Rayola. They went right to Daniel Kalen. Stars, I don't care.
Okay,
it doesn't matter to me.
To give you a better taste of the numbers, okay, the On3 industry ranking, which is all the rankings combined into one, has him number 27 in the quarterbacks. The four-star quarterbacks start at number 23.
Okay.
So there's three quarterbacks ahead of him until you get to the 4-star level. So he's right there.
Yeah, and I get it. I know some people look at that and say,
changes their life if they have a 4-star.
Well, I don't want to say, I'm not going to be disparaging it. I mean, there's some prestige attached to being a 4-star. I understand all that. But Rob's right. Once you got the player, does it matter that much?
At that point, it's just a star.
All right.
All right, next I have a series of under-over questions. So we'll go one by one. Thomas Fedoni, do you think he'll have over 250 yards or under?
I said over.
Yeah, 250 seems light.
I mean, yeah, he could have 100 in a game.
Right.
I mean,
250 struck me as light.
Yeah.
Light.
I thought 400 would be a better barometer to go with, or 4-5. I mean, but 250 seems like a likely number.
Don't you think that he could be their go-to tight end?
Yes.
That's what I'm expecting.
I think they want him to be their go-to tight end. Yeah.
All right, next. Princewell Umanyelen, does he have over or under 5 sacks next season?
That's a lot for a true freshman.
I said under. Maybe not by much, but
We're agreeing too much here. That's a lot.
I feel like these numbers were too obvious. Like, I mean, like, they weren't – this is from the chat this week, and they weren't, like, really that hard to say over. I mean, I think there were numbers that we were all.
We disagreed on some. I think the next two, we might have some disagreements.
Okay, the next one. Anthony Grant, over under 5 touchdowns.
Over.
See, I said under.
Really? Because who's you gonna think they're going to lean on Irvin?
I think they're going to run the QB a lot in the red zone. I think they're going to give Irvin the ball a lot on the goal line.
I still believe that Anthony Grant.
I think they're going to throw the ball on the goal line.
I believe that Anthony Grant is their best running back until I'm proven otherwise. Is there anybody on the roster you'd say he's looked better than Anthony Grant?
In their best moments, no.
No.
Ramir Johnson in his best moments, Gabe Irvin, have not looked better. A.J. Allen, you could argue in his best moments, danced with Anthony Grant when he was here.
Yeah.
But different show, different coach, different offense. We'll see.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, our last one, Malcolm Hartzog, 3 interceptions under over.
That's a tough number.
I said under.
I'll just say under because
3 picks is a lot.
It is. I took the easy way out and said push. Three sounds perfect.
Now, he will be their quote-unquote number two corner, could be their number two corner, which means more volume of throws his way, which means more opportunities for picks. So,
you know what's interesting about
maybe
that?
Teams are going to try to test him because he's a small corner out there. He made teams pay for doing that last year.
I wonder how long he will be their number two corner. I wonder if there's a point where you look at Hartzog and say, no, he's their best corner. And that's Newsom's a good player. Quentin Newsom, who's clearly he's going to be a starter. But I don't think Hartzog's too far behind that.
Define best, though. Like Prince, no one would throw him the ball. And so like Dennard got all the stats. You know, because people were they had to throw to him. They weren't throwing to Prince. Right. And so I'm not saying Quentin Newsom's Prince, whatever his name is.
I'm a Kamara.
But this is a guy that two coaching staffs now have said is an NFL corner. So
Newsom, yeah.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, so single game tickets went on sale on Wednesday for Colorado. How many Husker fans do you think will be in Boulder at the game?
That was quite the scene today. I don't know if you followed that.
No.
The tickets went on sale today to the public at 11 a.m. Central. And for one, as you might expect, the Colorado ticket website was just flooded. And they were doing only online purchases. Like, you couldn't call. You couldn't do in-person purchase. And so there was, like, people were waiting there for almost close to an hour, even to just get the chance to buy a ticket. And once they got there, like, if you wanted two seats together, you're looking at like $700 a pop.
So the Colorado ticket office is basically selling the tickets at a scalper's price.
And there's a lot of people that were trying to buy tickets from a Nebraska billing address that were said they couldn't get the thing to go through. But people from out of state billing addresses had no problems whatsoever.
Oh, boy.
Oh, conspiracies boy. For days.
Well, 1/3 the stadium is a conservative estimate for how many Nebraska fans will
I think
be there.
That's very conservative.
I think 15,000 for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
because this is just the initial public sale. Like, the secondary market is like, that's a whole nother wave of tickets that are going to be purchased, especially if they are denying Nebraska billing addresses from buying tickets.
It will be I mean, we say this all the time, but it's almost become a stock phrase. It's going to be a wild scene.
Even at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was pretty wild the last time. It was.
It was hot, too, remember?
Yeah, yeah. I remember very vividly. Yeah, it was hot on the field.
All right, we've got time, Abby, for two more.
Okay, how do you think that Husker baseball will do in the Big Ten tournament this week?
Mm. Well, they're playing their first game as we're taping this show, so that kind of dictates a lot of things. Yeah. I think they're going to win a couple, but they're not going to have enough to finish.
Yeah, they're not built to lose this game and have to play their way on the back end
pitching.
Of the tournament. Yeah, because they don't
not
have the pitching.
Pitching.
They
not,
need
they
to be front runners,
yeah.
Basically, from start to finish.
Stay on schedule.
That being said, I'd not hold my breath on that.
Not a lot of buzz, I mean, with all this right now. I mean, I just think a lot of the fans, you know, when you lose to North Dakota State, South Dakota State, UNO, Creighton, there's just not as much momentum with a fan base right now that wants to get behind this, but you haven't given them a lot. There's been some moments this year, but there hasn't been that consistency that will fill that stadium necessarily unless they can win these first couple games.
Well, I
mean,
the crowd
today is pretty good.
The other part of that is they're out of NCAA at-large bid contention. When it became clear that they're not an NCAA at-large bid, they're out of that. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of the wind out of the sails. If they were in contention for an NCAA at-large bid, we'd be following it very closely. They got to win it. They got to win the tournament. Now, if they get to the championship game, I bet the fan base does an about face almost. Like, oh, wait a second. They're in a championship game? 20,000 people in the stadium, right? Mm-hmm. Cheering for Nebraska to get to the NCAA tournament. Then it could change really fast. The dynamic could be really interesting this weekend. If they get to the championship, the state will be watching, right?
Yeah. They got to take care of today first. We'll see. See right. The shelf life of this conversation in a few hours.
Final question, Abby.
What chain restaurant that is not currently in Nebraska would you like to see at a location in Lincoln?
Bob Evans. 100%.
No, I'm a Portillo's guy myself.
I'm sorry?
Portillo's?
Yeah,
that
was a good pick.
And they do have one in Iowa. There's like a Cedar. Our friend Tom Cakert of Hawkeye Report lives in Davenport, mm-hmm. right in the Quad Cities there. They have one there, so I would go for Portillo's, hot Italian beef sandwich, Chicago dog.
Okay. Bob Evans is just a very good breakfast type place.
I went there next to the Detroit Airport Marriott.
You walked over there by yourself.
I did.
You were solo.
Yeah.
On a gray, dingy day, you made it over to Bob Evans.
It was
Evans.
Delicious. I'd never had Bob Evans, so
you bet. Credit
that. My pick, I remember answering this question. I went with Freebird's World Burrito. It's a... I guess you could call it Chipotle style.
It was like the original Chipotle.
Of place, yeah. It's based in Texas. Austin,
College
Texas.
Station, Austin.
Yeah.
That sounds great,
it is
Rob.
Phenomenal.
It I ate there great. Like 20-some years. I got introduced to that like 20-some years ago. I was in College Station, I believe, or Austin, and we had it there. And that
Freebirds.
So good.
Bob, what about you, Abby? What do you think?
I got a couple. One is Dutch Bros. It's like a coffee chain. Mm. They have it in Colorado where my cousins live. It's so good.
What's and so good about it?
Their coffee? I don't know.
It tastes good.
I'm a big coffee person.
Okay, all right.
It's way better than Starbucks, but I think everything is.
Well, hello.
Also,
well, there goes our sponsorship deal. I've been working on all summer.
I really like their Americanos.
I mean, actually, it's great. Also, Fuzzies. I would love to see another Fuzzies here. I know that it went down during COVID, but I loved going there in college.
Taco place?
Yeah, and they have really good margaritas.
Well, okay.
Fuzzies tacos.
We lost some good like BurgerFi. We lost during COVID right across. That was a good little option down here. We lost Jimmy John's. I mean, what Jimmy John's isn't making? We lost the one here in the Haymarket.
No.
We did.
Place is cleared out.
It was
Bummer.
A great option to have that just to walk over there and grab that when you're in a hurry, but. Give me my Portillo's.
Okay, Sean.
Oh, Walk-On's Bistro Sports Bar. That's the one that we saw in Purdue that Drew Brees owns. They're putting one of those in Gretna.
Nice. Oh, they are?
Yes.
Nice. Okay.
So that will
be. Say the name of the operation
Walk-On's.
Again. Walk-On's.
I mean, it's a southern Louisiana, Texas-based upscale sports bar chain that serves. You know, like Buzzard Billy's type food, Cajun food. So
it's a sports bistro spelled Bistreaux.
Okay.
All right. Let's give it that real Cajun flair.
On that note, we're going to close the show in our final segment. We'll hit on a number of different topics. You're listening here to the Husker Online Show.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places. Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
This is Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
And we're back here on the Husker Online Show. Final segment. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple, Robin Washett taking you home on Memorial Day weekend. Guys, you know Memorial Day weekend also signifies? It's the start of college football preseason magazines. And maybe I'm the only nerd that gets excited about this still. But I used to get great pleasure like going to our local Hy-Vee or Walgreens or wherever and buying those college football magazines. And Robin's been with me since 2008, and I still do it. Mm-hmm. And I come into the office.
It has not slowed down whatsoever.
I buy every one of them. The Lindy's, the Phil Steele is always my favorite. But
it's always the last one.
It's the last one.
Yeah.
And I remember I was in Connecticut on my summer internship driving to like Rhode Island. I saw a Phil Steele magazine in like a gas station in Rhode Island. I was like, oh God, I grabbed that sucker. I was so excited to see.
No, I'm glad you're, hey Sean, this is a good public service because a lot of people don't think of the Memorial Day weekend as that being a piece of it.
Athlon, Lindy's, and Phil Steele.
I appreciate it,
are
Sean.
The three main ones, right?
Yeah, I'll go, I mean, can I say I go to Barnes & Noble? That's where I go. I go to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, that's going to be your most consistent place. Now, Hy-Vee will sometimes slip. I was in Hy-Vee this morning.
And?
I purposely had a package that I could have mailed at our downstairs post office here. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go into Hy-Vee and just see if those magazines made the shelf. Didn't make the shelf yet.
Okay. No, I'm glad that's... Sean, I appreciate this. Because that's college football tradition. That's what that is. That's a beautiful part of it, actually. And And really, how often do you sit down with a magazine anymore? Mm-hmm. Well, now, I still have last year's Lindy sitting on my kitchen table. I mean, I keep it like a bot. Like
for our purposes, like right now, they're like invaluable.
They're
just
gold.
For one, to learn about who Nebraska is going to play, what the rest of the conference looks like, to see a depth chart, and just they break down each position. So you have a pretty good frame of reference for what you're talking about all offseason when you're previewing games in July.
100%.
So, you know, like they're a real tool for what we do.
Yeah. And now think about it, though. Think about this day and age we're in, how often rosters change. I mean, Nebraska just added a player. Mm-hmm. The one, the up-to-date information is really valuable. And I will say this. Some magazines are better than others at that. I'd say Lindy's is high-end. Like, I was
amazed.
Well,
Tom Dienhart does Lindy's, right? For the Big Ten.
Yeah, for the Big Ten. And it's pretty up-to-date. It's about as up-to-date as you could expect. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Sean, I'm glad you brought that up.
That's the key, though. Like, you got to have somebody like a Tom Dienhart doing these for, like, the certain conferences. Like, because I've seen – you can see some bad ones where, like, there's players on the depth chart that aren't even here anymore.
There's pictures of guys that aren't even on the team.
Right. Like, right. I'm glad you said that about Dienhart. Lindy's is what I buy because of Dienhart, because I know Dienhart's going to have good information.
Well, he calls us, and he goes over things of the, like, he always asks me, what do you think of these? Like, the, you know, like, he asks a lot of people for their feedback to make sure it's good.
Mm-hmm. Remember Curiously last year, and this is no, I'm not, this isn't a commentary on the player. It was just very interesting that Ramir Johnson was the cover boy for Nebraska's magazines last year.
Yeah, not Casey Thompson. I mean, I would have put Casey Thompson on the cover.
Yeah.
But they probably didn't. I mean, they could have used a spring game photo of him, but that would have been the problem. But, like, to me, you put, like, who's going to sell the most magazines on the cover?
Yeah, it was
Garrett Nelson. Why wasn't Garrett Nelson on the cover?
Right. He was definitely the face of the program from a player standpoint, and he embraced that. I didn't think it was bad to have Ramir on there. I just thought it was curious. It was curious to me.
Who are you going
to
put on? So if you're doing the cover,
okay,
now,
who are you putting on? Hold on.
Because, like, Quentin Newsome, and does that sell? Like, you put?
I think you put Jeff Sims on there. That's what I think. We know he's the starter. I think it's Jeff Sims. He's the most exciting player.
He's the starting quarterback of the new era, or you just do Matt Rhule.
But if
they don't put coaches on those covers,
Don't. I'd say Jeff Sims. Now, what about defense? If they want to put a defender, you put Newsome?
Like Quentin Newsome? Well, Reimer. Ty Robinson. Reimer.
Yeah. You know what? I'm putting Jeff Sims, or I'm putting Anthony Grant.
Anthony Grant.
Yeah, I'm putting
Jeff Sims.
Okay.
I remember we were with Ramir last summer, and he was almost like uncomfortable being on the cover. He's like, he was probably surprised himself.
Oh, I remember distinctly when we were doing those interviews last summer, and he threw out that, well, you know, they're asking me to play some slot too, and I was like, oh God. I did say it to him, but I wanted to say, be careful with that.
The wide back.
Yeah. But you know what? They're doing it again. And maybe it'll work better this time.
You're listening here to the Husker Online Show as we wrap it up here, guys. Also want to hit on Matt Rhule's comments in USA Today about what Nebraska wants to do on offense.
Well, he said, I thought it was a really well-written column by Paul Meyerberg of USA Today. And he said a couple things that were fascinating. He said Rhule told him, we're going to practice long, and we're going to be physical. And he said, I know that's not in vogue right now, but that's what Nebraska fans want. They want us to be a physical football team. We're going to have long physical practices. So I think it's valuable that there's a column. I think it's valuable. I think pieces like this sort of column, because we're still kind of getting to know Matt Rhule and how he wants to go about this, right? So that was informative. And then he said later in the article that our strength is a running game. Our strength is a running game that we will use behind a big physical offensive line. Now think about that in the context of last year. Mm-hmm. Nebraska's strength wasn't a running game behind a big physical offensive line, right? Now, the offensive line configuration's changed. Sean pointed out on my radio show this morning, Noradin Nwuili wasn't available last year. Prochaska was hurt. Sean, who was the third? Who was the third guy?
Ben Scott.
Ben Scott. Three different guys on the line now. So Rhule's saying
you can't call this line last year's line.
No, not really.
And that's... You know, if you have a negative half-empty spin, it's the same guy. It's not the same guys.
How about that, though? How about Rhule saying in USA Today, our strength is a running game behind a big physical offensive line? That catches my attention.
And that the ability to run the football and get downhill is probably our greatest strength.
Now, again, there's something else that needs to be pointed out here. At Baylor, Temple, and Carolina, they didn't run the ball that well. Okay, his best team at Baylor, guys, was 61st nationally in rushing. Okay, his best team at Temple, I'm trying to get Sean's attention. He's watching TV.
Huskers hit a three-run jack. Sorry. Okay.
His best running team at Temple was 61st. Okay.
I'm listening.
His best running game at Baylor was 61st. At Carolina, they were 21st in the league his first year and 20th in the second year. Mm-hmm. It's not like his history is, oh, yeah, we pounded
Has the ball he had a guy like Jeff Sims, though, that can add to the running game? Because when you have a running quarterback, you don't have a lot of sacks either.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of these comments that he's making are based on personnel, to where, like, the whole narrative is what he's starting with at Nebraska is light years ahead of what he had starting at Temple and Could what be. He had starting at Baylor.
They like his run, they like their
to
running
To where,
backs.
Like, they are so much further along in the process from a personnel standpoint that you can make comments like that. Well, I always wanted to run the ball, but I never had the horses to do it. Now I've got a big offensive line and a stable of running backs. Now we're going to change this identity from what I had done in previous.
Well, it's not only that. It's that. It could be that. But it's also a couple things. He's in a conference now where it's not – now, listen, I got to be careful here. It's not really the power-based run game conference it used to be. So Nebraska could be kind of unique. And what else could be a factor here? His boss wants a certain kind of football. I don't think Trev wants air raid at Nebraska. I don't think he'd want a Mike Riley offense here. Not
well, Mike Riley. There. Mike Riley.
He ran it a little bit.
The UCLA bowl game.
That was an aberration.
That was kind of an anomaly.
That was a bit of an aberration.
He didn't want the Frost offense.
Hey, trust me when I say that's an aberration, because I thought, okay, that night, okay, Riley gets it. This is what it's going to look like. It didn't look like that.
Yeah, Langsdorf didn't want to run it either very much.
Not really.
But he would argue back, yeah, we want to run it, but not when you get 1 yard on first down.
Right. But anyway, yeah, those comments in the USA Today article, and that USA Today article in general, was very revealing.
All right, big weekend, as we talked about, Big Ten baseball coverage on Husker Online. Grant Hansen will be out on site covering the action for us. So make sure you check that out on our site. Lots going on. Summer football camps still won't start until the first weekend of June. So a little bit of a calm before the storm. We've got a great deal at Husker Online right now. 6 months for $29.99 gets you access. If you're not a member, check that out. Also, like and follow us here both on YouTube, and subscribe to our podcast anywhere you can find podcasts. Thanks for joining us here this week on Husker Online.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Husker Online, your authority on Nebraska athletics.
That's trouble. Seriously.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.